Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
So at the end of the hour and at the end of the day, is there any argument for delaying the implementation of the Affordable Care Act or stopping the Health Care Reform Act in midstream in any way? Would there be any benefit to allowing Navy electricians like we talked to earlier this hour and park rangers to return to work while telling the people who are anxious to get health insurance under the ACA marketplaces to wait a year? Ovik Roy and Ezekiel Emanuel join us now. Ovik Roy is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Ezekiel Emanuel is a former Obama administration advisor on health care. Currently, he serves as the chair of the Department of Medical Ethics and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania. Welcome to both of you.
How are you?
Thank you.
Ezekiel, let's begin with you. What would be so bad about delaying the ACA for a year?
Well, the entire country is ready and geared up. The insurance companies are ready and geared up. The health systems are ready and geared up. And I think we're set to go. And I think the last offer was about the stupidest offer I could imagine. Delay the individual mandate. You cannot have an insurance marketplace that excludes pre-existing conditions without an individual mandate. So there's no real rationale for postponing it other than grandstanding and hot political rhetoric.
That's Ezekiel Emanuel. Ovik Roy, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Delay, I mean, we've already talked with insurance companies who are going ahead with this. People are signing up. What is the point of delaying?
Well, let me first say that I have been outspoken in criticizing the Ted Cruz strategy of linking the continuing resolution and the government shutdown. I don't think that's the right idea. But I will say that a lot of the state exchange directors have asked for a year delay. So Kevin Counihan, who's the CEO of the Connecticut Exchange, has said, we've had so much trouble complying with all the HHS regulations, which come out every couple of weeks, and then we have to redesign our entire exchange based on that, that he's not comfortable that the exchange will be ready and up and running and have the security features necessary to ensure that the people who are signing up get the coverage they're supposed to get, that the subsidies they're eligible for or ineligible for are the ones that they're assigned. These are some of the problems. Privacy is another one. These are some of the problems the exchanges have. So it's not correct to say that the exchanges are ready to go. They could benefit from some extra time to get up and running.
But that's no different than a lot of the bluster and confusion that accompanies significant change at the federal level. And this is a fairly complicated act. That doesn't suggest there's a systemic problem with the exchanges,
yeah,
does it?
I would say there's three categories of issues with the exchange. The first is the kind of really small technical things that can be worked out over time that aren't really that big of a deal. There's a second category, like the issue of income verification, which does need to be fixed before subsidies go out, because then you could have a lot of problems with people's financial planning, with waste, fraud, and abuse, things like that. So that's a second category that is important to address. The third category, which gets really to the heart of your question, is are there any design flaws in the way the exchanges were set up? And I think those are considerable, and that's one of the reasons why the insurance product that's being offered on the exchange is going to be a lot more expensive than what people are used to shopping for coverage on their own.
All right, Ezekiel Emanuel, address the cost question and the other arguments that Ovik Roy made.
First of all, I think the technical glitches we're all agreed are going to be ironed out, and probably running it for a few weeks is going to be the best way to iron those glitches out. On the design, the notion of exchanges, the notion of subsidies, those are old standing notions in healthcare. They've gone back three decades. Health policy experts agree we have a very good system. I don't think it's perfect. I think there are going to be some people, where their situation is going to be worse, but for most people, it's going to be better. If some people, their rates will rise because they've had very bad coverage or they've had coverage that's excluded some key issues. The current system, the system that we've put into place, covers all preventative care for free, prenatal care, birth control pills, all cancer screening. You have no deductibles. That will raise your rates a little, but it's an important thing to get everyone involved. On balance, it's going to be much better for the vast majority of people. It'll give them choice where they haven't had choice, and it'll protect them from very high costs if they get cancer or a serious accident or things like that. That is a huge benefit to people in the country.
All right. The former Obama health care advisor, Ezekiel Emanuel, who's now at the University of Pennsylvania. Ovik Roy, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute, react to the economic argument there. Net benefit for the 300 million people who are going to be a part of this.
Yeah, so I'm one of those conservative health policy experts who does support the idea of exchanges and subsidies. It is a viable model. The question is whether or not the ACA's implementation of exchanges and subsidies is a good one. And I'd have to strongly contest Zeke's argument that only some people are going to see rate increases under the Affordable Care Act's exchanges. A study that I and my colleagues at the Manhattan Institute conducted showed that the vast majority of people under the exchanges will see increases. The people who will benefit are very poor people, people whose income is close to the poverty line, and people who are very sick who will get discounted rates. But the 90% of people who are healthy and the 75 to 80% of people whose incomes are low to middle income and above, the impact of subsidies will be too small to offset the large increase in rates that they will encounter. The underlying increase in premiums we've calculated is about 99% for men and about 62% for women. Low-income people will benefit, but that's a small number of people.
Ezekiel?
Let me give you an example of someone I just interviewed, a gardener in Los Angeles, 30 years old. His crew makes around $17,000 a year. He was quoted prices of $500 a month before the exchanges went into effect. With the exchanges, he's probably going to be able to get it for about $50 per person per month, and he can easily afford to give his crew insurance. That's the kind of difference you're going to get. These are guys making $17,000 a year.
But that's not the median income in California. That's well below. That's close to the poverty line. That's the whole point. So if your income is between 1 and 2 times the poverty line, you're going to benefit from this law, and I've stipulated that. But people
most of the uninsured are below 2 times the poverty line. That's why
true.
They can't get health care.
That's not true.
So they're going to be at advantage, which was the whole point here, to get the uninsured coverage. Now, let me give you another example. I have a friend in Colorado, self-insured, works alone, got cancer. Her insurance company jacked up her rate 24%. Now, I'm pretty sure that on the exchange, she's going to be able to get a better deal because she has a pre-existing condition.
Although these are
people who are definitely going to be benefited from the exchange.
You agree that people who are sick will get a discount under this, and that's one of the advantages.
Sick, people who are sick and people who are low income will benefit. Everyone else will not.
I'm hearing, though, gentlemen, both of you say, let's just do it now, that there really isn't a huge argument for delaying this and shutting down the government. Let's do it now. Let's see what the test is and do the fix when it's time to do that, a year down the line, 2 years down the line. Ovik Roy, final thoughts?
As I said, I would support a delay to work out some of the design flaws and some of the issues around rate shock, some of the issues around income verification. Having said that, we shouldn't be talking about shutting down the government over that. And I think that the time to make that argument was last year, not this year.
Ezekiel Emanuel?
We do need to give people insurance. And from a health policy standpoint, there's no reason for delay, as we've both agreed here, both from the conservative and liberal standpoint. There is a need to work out kinks. The president agrees on that. And shutting down the government or delaying increasing the national ability to borrow, those aren't going to solve that problem. Let's solve the problem instead of talking about heated political rhetoric that has nothing to do with health care.
Ezekiel Emanuel, former Obama administration advisor on health care. He serves as the chair of the Department of Medical Ethics and Health Policy at the University of Pennsylvania. And Ovik Roy, senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Thanks for a spirited conversation, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
Take care.